Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Monday to you. Welcome in. It is Sports Daily, and we are coming to you live right now on KFH. We're glad to have you here live on the 12 News Connected app. Live right now on the Odyssey app, but maybe not when you're listening to us on the Odyssey app. We were live for those of you who podcast us out. We appreciate that. If you ever miss anything on the show, you can just go to the Odyssey app and get it in podcast form. The IHOP hotline is open for you at 869-1240. It's, of course, brought to you by IHOP, where you can celebrate the weekdays with the new IHOP House faves, all your favorites, just $6 Monday through Friday. We've got Wyatt Thompson joining the program in just a little bit. Excited about that. He is the voice of the Wildcats, of course, and he will help us go through a massive win out in the mountains. By the way, I'm Jacob Albrecht alongside Tommy Kester, and we have Max Power in with us this week for JAD. Glad to have Max in as well. Glad to have all you with us, the ways you take in the show. You can leave us comments on our video stream as well, Facebook, YouTube, X. It's all there for you. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Happy Monday. Good to see you. A busy weekend, a lot going on, a lot of football to consume. It was nice because, you know, as much as I don't like bye weeks, you had the Chiefs bye week line up with KU's bye week, and so you could really focus in on K-State, focus in on the rest of college football. It was a great college football weekend. NFL was wild, as always. So, of course, we're reacting to all of it today on Sports Daily.
We're going to get into the Cats in our next segment with Wyatt Thompson. So let's start with a brief overview of the NFL weekend. It was Chiefs-less, but I almost took it as a chance. Like, if you're the Chiefs, you sort of sit back and size everybody up, right? Things certainly have not gone perfectly for the Chiefs, you know, like on the roster and those things, but they're, you know, they're one of the perfect teams. Both of them, in fact, were off this week, the Vikings and the Chiefs. So you have those two teams, which are clearly 1 and 2 in the power rankings, all those things, have this opportunity to just sort of look around the league. And that's kind of what I felt like I was doing yesterday, all the way into Sunday Night Football with the Bengals, who, you know, coming into the year, certainly we felt like was this team. I got to tell you, and I know they found a way to win that game. Our offensive line sucks. And I don't know how much of their, this first time I had a chance to like really just like sit and watch them through, other than the time they played the Chiefs. They can't protect better than that. They're not doing anything. Like, their defense showed up a little bit. Great, great. You know, pat on the back. You played the Giants. You know, like, I don't really care about that. So I did that with a lot of teams this weekend, though. Like, are the Bengals for real? I'll say not right now. Can they be? Yeah, probably by the end of the year. But they got a lot of work to do. We'll see a couple of teams in that same light tonight with the Bills and the Jets. We'll talk about that game. But I thought there were a lot of teams, maybe, Tommy, that we weren't necessarily thinking about to start the year, or at least convinced with, that made really impressive statements. I thought the Bears did that, started it off that way. I thought the Chargers did that. Two teams that maybe people were on the fence about. The Buccaneers and the Falcons, I think, both did that as well yesterday. So I thought there were a lot of statements made yesterday. Then there were big statements made by the teams we expected to be really good. The Ravens, the Lions, of course, making huge statements. The Texans looked really nice. So it was the Packers probably fit into that category. It was a good, I thought, sizing up weekend across the NFL.
Yeah, I really think it was. And, you know, primetime last night, you really, I'm sure that Bengals fans really wanted to see Cincinnati flex a little bit on primetime and show like, hey, we're back. We're one of the top teams. It's been not a great season for us so far. We've had our fair share of issues, especially defensively, but we're going to step up. We're going to show you that we are still a contender in the AFC. And yeah, they get a win, but the Giants aren't any good, and they didn't blow away the Giants.
So without Malik Nabers,
exactly,
without their starting running back.
And so I do think that does tell you something. I think it tells you that their record for the Bengals, their record is who they are. They're not a great team. They're an okay team. They've got weapons. They've got firepower. But they're not a team that, you know, has been really able to string it all together. I think it tells you a lot about Cincinnati long term. If they had gone out there and blown out The Giants, you know, I think it'd be a little bit of a different situation, but they really struggled to move the football. You know, it took Joe Burrow getting into the end zone on his own, you know, really to be able to have them win that game. So I'm not impressed coming away from the primetime game last night about Cincinnati. You know, the teams that you mentioned as far as the ones that made those statements, out of all of them, I think I'm most impressed with the Buccaneers. I think that with what they've been able to do offensively, you know, it tells me that they are for real. And I think they should be considered a legitimate contender in the NFC. I think they're going to come out of that division. And I know that the Falcons probably have something to say about that. New Orleans probably does too, to an extent. But it's really Tampa Bay's division. And I think they're a legitimate contender in that conference.
Yeah, look, the Buccaneers this year, by the way, and I agree with you, I think their defense is flawed, clearly. And, you know, yesterday you give up 27 points to the Saints without Derek Carr. I don't know how good Spencer Rattler is going to be. I guess time will tell. But their wins, Tommy, are against the Commanders, the Lions, the Eagles, and then now you throw in New Orleans. I mean, they have a really weird loss to Denver, but they've beaten good teams this year. So, like, that's, I think you have to take something from that. And that's, you know, they didn't have Rashad White in that game and they still scored 51. They were able to run the ball without, you know.
Chris Godwin looked outstanding catching the ball from Baker Mayfield.
They really do have, like, if they can play some defense, you kind of like everything that they've got going. Whereas the Bengals, who took the Chiefs to the wire and easily could have beat them, the Bengals seem like a dangerous team if they can get there, but getting there is going to be a real challenge. Whereas the Buccaneers look like a safe team to get there, and it's just how much better can they make their defense by the time they get there. I thought we saw the Chargers make a big statement yesterday. I actually kind of believe in this, and I didn't see what the final diagnosis on Harbaugh was, but the Chargers feel like a team that's going to probably be competitive in every game they play and will just hang around because of the style of football they play. They're certainly better and ahead of schedule. The Texans finally flexed even without Nico Collins. I'll tell you who probably we need to pay attention to the most, in my opinion, versus what, like, the range of outcomes is, it's the Bears. And we knew their defense would be really good. It was supposed to be. We didn't know what a rookie quarterback was going to be able to do. And at times it has been slow going. That was the best we've seen of Caleb Williams. And look, I agree with the people, and some people may think this is sacrilegious and would overreact to it. He does stylistically remind me a little bit of Patrick Mahomes when he plays football. He's not as good as Patrick Mahomes. Don't misunderstand, but like his style, like if you're trying to say like, who's that guy look like? That's kind of who he's always reminded me of a little bit. He looked really good. And if he is good, remember what they did around him. Like, if he's good, that's a really good roster on that team.
I like the Bears a lot, and it's really not even that much about Caleb Williams. It is to an extent. I mean, obviously, he's the guy. Like, he's their franchise guy, but it's more about the supporting pieces around him. You know, I've been critical over the last, I don't know, 9 months or so about the Bears' decision to move on from Justin Fields and bring in Caleb Williams, because I felt like the Bears built an offense specifically for Justin Fields around him, and then they punted on that and drafted Caleb Williams. But the more that I watch the Bears, the more I realize that the offense that they may have built for Justin Fields can work with almost anybody. And so it's working with Caleb Williams. I'm impressed with Williams. I think he has come along quicker and further than I thought that he probably would. You know, am I a long-term believer in Caleb Williams? I'm not quite there yet. I think, really? At least for me, I think he'll be a really good quarterback. I think that he clearly yesterday played out of his mind in London. The Jaguars are not good at all. Doug Peterson will probably be the first coach to get let go in this cycle, or the second one, I guess, after Robert Saleh.
McCarthy should have.
McCarthy's right there too, but I think Peterson's probably on his way out. So I think that is just as much of how bad the Jags are.
Yeah,
you know, compared with how good the Bears are, I think you have to take both into consideration there.
I do. I was Team Williams, though, and you know that. I've been in on Williams. I thought he should have been the first pick. I really liked him, and that's not a knock to the other quarterbacks, because I liked almost all of them, honestly, this year. I was with the masses. That's a really good class, and I think it's showing that. But I think he's really good. And I think he's going to be really good. Is he CJ Stroud? Is he going to be able to do what CJ Stroud? And by the way, it's red zone with Stroud yesterday. He is unbelievable. CJ Stroud is incredible. Like, it's not a flash in the pan. Some of the throws he's making, but anyway, is he going to put up numbers like Stroud did in his rookie year, or Mahomes did in his first year as a starter? No, I don't think so, but I think he can be the best rookie, and Jaden Daniels has been incredible, and we'll see. We're 6 weeks in, and those two look great, but I think by the end of it, we could see Williams right up there with anybody, and his team is just a little better, I think, than maybe we realized. Speaking of Daniels, loses to the Ravens. Ravens get the win there, and the Lions. Those are the two big, like, monumental wins, Ravens, Lions. And we can file this away because we'll get to Wyatt Thompson here in just a few minutes. But those are the two teams, I think, that establish themselves. I mean, honestly, Tommy, maybe even at the top of their respective leagues. And I say that, and I would still take the Chiefs over the Ravens. They obviously beat the Ravens. But when you factor in health, I think it's close. And I know the Vikings are unbeaten and all those things. When I factor everything in, I'm probably still taking the Lions. We'll see if you agree with that. So file that away. We'll get to that later in the program. Your calls, your comments, all welcome. 869-1240 on the IHOP hotline. We're going to bring in Wyatt Thompson next. The Cats winners in Colorado. And they do it again in a way that I just don't think should surprise us. And it makes me really optimistic for the rest of their way. And what they've been doing and allowing teams to do, it all seems very much exactly what they want to be doing. So we'll get Wyatt Thompson's take on that next. The voice of the Wildcats joins us, Sports Daily. We'll give away some Wichita Thunder hockey tickets before we go today. We'll give away a little HTO before we go today. So stay tuned for your opportunities there. Want to say thank you to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning here on KFH. When we return, Wyatt Thompson. We'll talk a little Cats winners in Boulder over the high-powered Colorado Buffaloes. That's next.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily, and we are glad to be here with you. On your way into work, I want to keep listening to Sports Daily, even after you park the car. With the Odyssey app and Odyssey.com, you can just download the app. Visit Odyssey.com, search for KFH. Download the Odyssey app today to get started. You can even leave us voice messages there on the Odyssey app that feed right there into Max this week. And you can also go back and listen to this interview if you're not able to catch all of it at any point. It gets podcasted out as we bring in Wyatt Thompson, voice of the Wildcats, K-State, big winners. It was as exciting as promised, 31-28 over the Buffaloes of Colorado. As much bad fortune as there was in the mountains the last time the Cats were there. A little, you know, good fortune in that they were able to maintain and hold through. And look, Colorado, Wyatt, they were down their top two pass catchers most of that game. And K-State was able to take advantage and get the win. Shedeur Sanders still looked good. But here's this game plan again where they want teams to throw on them and not run on them. And it keeps working.
It does. Good to be on with you guys again. It was a terrific football game and a great win for the Cats. I think they overcame a lot of things. I thought Colorado really battled too. It's very, very, very obvious that they're quite an improving team, I'll say it that way, compared to what they were in week one with North Dakota State and what they were, you know, the last few weeks. It's pretty remarkable what they've done, and they do have a lot of great athletes. It's so impressive watching Shedeur live. He just is such an accurate passer under duress. Yeah, he gets sacked occasionally. Every now and again, he'll throw a bad ball or what have you, but he is such a competitor. Really proud of the guys. You know, I love the defense from the standpoint of the plan going in with a taking Austin Romaine out of the starting lineup, which is hard to do. He's one of the highest rated middle linebackers in the country. And you start six DBs, and I thought that really got K-State off to a decent start in the game, and they just kept battling, and man, it was a war. I'm not going to lie. It was hard, but K-State found a way, and it feels really good. I can promise you that.
Wyatt, let's jump ahead to the go-ahead touchdown, ultimately the winning touchdown for Kansas State in the fourth quarter. Avery Johnson connecting with Jace Brown, a 50-yard TD pass, a go route for Brown against man coverage. As that whole situation was setting up and knowing that the Wildcats needed to get into the end zone to take the lead and ultimately win the game, what did you guys see leading up to that, the play call? I mean, just walk us through that entire sequence to be able to get that go-ahead TD.
Well, I think there were a couple of plays that you saw multiple times in the game that K-State felt like they had a distinct advantage on, and that was the wheel route out of the backfield to DJ Giddens. He dropped one, but also made a great catch and run late in the game when they had to have it after falling behind. And then the other is just the long pass, you know, to Jace. It's really, to me, proof that you can see the growth in Avery. That was a dime on that on the game winning touchdown pass, man. It was perfectly thrown, and it was decent coverage. It wasn't perfect, but it was really decent coverage. I just felt like, I don't know how to explain this. I felt so good for Avery doing that after he had that, you know, deflected interception that turned into a touchdown. And you're up 24-14, and now, you know, 3 minutes to go, you think you're going to lose the game, right? I mean, let's be honest. I'm sure a lot of people thought that. But to find a way to do that and come back and go that far in three plays, that's impressive.
I want to – speaking of Avery, this was going to be, we thought, even in the late window, a high-profile game for him. Yeah. With Colorado, and I think it ended up being that. And I only gauge that anecdotally on the number of people that – don't typically watch K-State that were asking me about him doing Prime's dance in the end zone. And, and quite frankly, I was like, yep, that's he did. And then, you know, I loved it. I thought it was great, but it did, I think, give a good example of just how many eyeballs were on this game. And that added to the drama, and that stuff matters, I think, for K-State football big picture to have Avery on the field. Yes. But Avery being a superstar is important, I think, in the modern college football era.
Well, I think that's perfectly said. I think you can even say it this way. Tell me if you think this is accurate or not. I think in so many ways, away from his talent, he's a very confident but somewhat soft-spoken guy.
Yeah.
And then there's that side of him, you know, that is doing that. You know, and a lot of people have asked me, you know, about, you know, him riding the bike and taking a selfie right in the middle of it.
I love it.
You know, I don't know necessarily, I'm wondering out loud here, but I'm wondering if the coaches are saying to him at some point, don't do that anymore. The rest of it is fine. I don't know that. But he's got some flair. There's no question about that. And on a night where, you know, we saw a lot of, and let's be honest, Prime out there is like on a scale of 1 to 10 at about 50.
Yeah.
Right. You saw all the NBA people on the sideline there and all of the flash and dash of what they are. And Prime, he's done a great job, man. He's a personality person. And sometimes it's all right to let a little personality show. I think that's what makes sports a little different now than it might have been even as short as, you know, 8-10 years ago, frankly, maybe even 5 years ago.
DJ Giddens, Wyatt, has, again, had another great game on the ground for the Wildcats, and it's kind of like rinse and repeat for DJ Giddens. He's been, I think, a key factor to allow some of that pressure to be taken off of the shoulders of Avery Johnson through the air, just because he's been, I guess, Mr. Reliable on the ground. As I was watching him last night, and you know, he goes for another game of over 100 yards rushing. To me, you know, he strikes me as one of, if not the best running backs in the Big 12 this season. And I always knew that he was a good player, obviously, if, you know, when he had that timeshare, you know, a couple years ago, and then kind of leading his way up to being the lead back Do you feel like you've seen him get to a point to where he's kind of solidified his place among running backs in the conference?
If he hasn't, they're not watching closely enough.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy that's averaging over 7 yards a carry. He is as durable as it gets. I think you saw maybe the best play that I've seen to basically prove his athleticism and his ability is the little shake move past Sanders the other night. Shiloh had no chance.
Yeah.
Right?
Took him to the ground,
I think
right?
You guys know the play I'm talking about. He's just proving over and over and over just how much he can do, the load he takes. He's such an unassuming guy, and yet when he's out there, production-wise, he's as good as most. There's no doubt in my mind about that. I find him such an intriguing personality, to be honest about it, and I think I don't know whether he likes all the interviews and the spotlight or not. But you cannot take away that production-wise, he's one of the best football players in America right now. No doubt in my mind about that.
And I think his success speaks to something else that I'm never smart enough to know a great deal. I can easily see how an offensive line plays when they play poorly. It's a little more difficult to see when they're playing the right way, but for a unit that had as many questions as it did coming in, I have to imagine the coaching staff has been very pleased with the way this offensive line has played this year.
I'm so glad you asked about that, because I think all of those guys, whether it's Dylan Edwards, Avery Johnson, DJ Giddens, will tell you those guys, after frankly a little bit of a slow start, have been great. I'm certainly prejudiced, but I think they're playing as well as any offensive line group in the league at this particular point. And I don't see everybody every week. I understand that, but I do watch a lot of football and I follow this very, very closely. Colorado is a lot better defensively and their schemes are good. They play so hard. They just really run to the football and all that kind of stuff. And let's be honest, most of the night, K-State was dominant and just blowing them off the ball. I guess what I'm trying to get at is I think everybody knew, Jacob, how much K-State lost on the offensive line. It was a concern, and I get it. It should have been. But as I said from the beginning, they have more experience there than people understand. And once they play a little bit together, I'm anxious to see what happens. And I think it's proven out that way. I'll give you what I believe is the perfect example is Easton Kilty, the left tackle. I'll bet he's playing 30 to 35% better right now than he did in weeks 1 and 2. And this is a guy that started basically for 3 years at North Dakota. He's a really good football player. You know, you got Hadley Panzer who can play almost everywhere, right? Sam Hecht is one of the best stories that isn't being told because of just where he plays and what have you. He's been really, really good. And then Portier and you know, some of those other kids. I love how can you not love Carver Willis's toughness? You know, I mean, all those guys, they're really well coached for one. They have more experience than I think perception with the perception being out there. And they're a tough group. I'm so proud of what they've done. I'm just being blunt about that. They've been terrific.
Wyatt, when we're talking about the defense for Kansas State, you know, the pass rush being able to, you know, make Shedeur Sanders at least a little bit uncomfortable in the pocket, I think was clearly the highlight defensively for the Wildcats. And it's, you know, Shedeur Sanders, he's one of, if not the best quarterbacks in the entire country. He finished 34-40, 388 yards, 3 touchdowns. When he had time in the pocket, he carved up the secondary for Kansas State. Is that, in your mind, more indicative of just the talent of Shedeur Sanders, or is there something with the secondary with Kansas State that you think moving forward needs to be shored up?
Well, that is a really good question. And I'll just be as blunt as I can be on this. I have to start with Shedeur Sanders' yeah. ability. He made a 55-60 yard throw the other night. I've been doing Division I football games since 1989. It was as good a throw as I have ever seen. Let me say that again, as I have ever seen. It was remarkable. He has a great ability. And I thought Stan talked about this on our broadcast and it played out perfectly. He said, it's hard. You can get to him with a guy, but you can't get him to the ground with one. It takes two. And I think that was proven out. He just extends plays. He does a lot. I'm saying all of that to say, as much as he did in a one-dimensional offense, I still think K-State defended him pretty well and did an okay job and put themselves in a position to win the game. And at the end of the day, that's what really truly matters. I was so proud of the defensive effort and with that secondary from the standpoint of playing, you know, six guys most of the night, a lot of guys coming in and out of the lineup. I mean, Justice James started in the game. Kobe McAllister started in the game.
They're banged up.
Two guys were really, honestly, if I'm being honest, were playing out of position from where they normally play. I thought the coaching there was great, and I'm just going to be blunt about that. I really, truly did. I thought it was awesome.
It's both teams were dropping like flies in that game. I don't know what Absolutely. Was going on, but yeah. K-State secondary was depleted. Avery Johnson left the game, and I bring that up because now this very dangerous portion of the schedule really takes center stage. You had as late as you can play a college football game, and now you've got to go back the other direction all the way across the country. West Virginia's better than people thought before the year. You've got all these injuries now to deal with as well, and West Virginia's pissed that they just lost. So this seems like a very trappy week that K-State has got to be laser focused on, and then Kansas looms after that. This is tricky.
You said everything there in my mind because, again, this was a – I just told a coworker that my front wheels of my vehicle was at the entrance of the airport leaving the airport Sunday morning at 5:03.
Man.
That gives you a pretty good idea of what they're dealing with. And we talked about this a few weeks ago after Provo, right? And they were mad that they lost there. They were upset the way they played. And I think they made a statement against Oklahoma State. And I think they're continuing to get better. And I think they're well coached and all of those things. But your point is so good because you have a short week and then another long trip. Now, this isn't a 9:30 game. It's 6:30, and that makes a difference, of course. But you also said that West Virginia is better than people think, and I believe that is so. That Iowa State game at their place was a lot closer than the 28-16 might lead you to believe. I think Garrett Green is playing really, really good football right now. He's a run-throw threat. They've got pieces. They've got two pros on their offensive line. They're usually pretty good defensively. And then, as you say, you come back, and it's going to be about a month before K-State has played a home game, and then it's against Kansas. And despite their troubles, you know what that game is going to be like. Emotions crazy high. So, yeah, this winning in Boulder was euphoric for me. I'm not going to kid you. I thought it was a great win for the program and Coach Klieman and all those guys. But now – with what lies in front, it's like people are going to say, hey, take care of business. You're going to end up in Arlington. That's true, but you still got to go do it. And those games will be hard. We all know it. 100%, right?
Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
I see a reaction there. It's true.
It is. And with this conference, Wyatt, that's a good lead into what I was going to ask you about the Big 12. You know, through the first three conference games, the three undefeated teams in conference were picked 6th, 9th and 13th respectively in the preseason rankings in the Big 12. I don't think anybody saw that particularly coming, but I do know that, I mean, going into the season, I think the thought was maybe outside of Utah, it was going to be a big jumbled up mess. It's a big jumbled up mess, but the teams that are at the very top that have kind of risen above and are undefeated through three games are three teams that I don't think anybody saw coming.
Oh, I love the subject too, because, you know, take Utah as an example. They're really a good football team.
Yeah.
I'm still convinced of that. But their lead guy has not done much. That has a monumental effect on their team. He's had a bad hand. If you watched the game the other night, he got an ankle rolled in the first quarter of the game and gutted it out, but didn't play very well. You know, on the other side, you know, I think we all thought BYU was going to be better, but who saw Retzlaff making that kind of leap? Tech has a lot of football players back, and for whatever reason, nobody really noticed that. Baron Morton's been the quarterback there a long time, and I think they're well coached, and they always have good athletes. I guess I'll make this point too, to say, you know, those coaches made these picks. They know what they're talking about for the most part, right? But like last year, if you remember Big 12 Media Days last year, guys, and I know you do, I'm going to say something here on the air that I usually don't say, but Neil Brown got up there and he was pissed that they were picked last in the league.
Yeah.
And they were so motivated by that, they went out and won 9 games. This league is hard. That's the point.
And, it is.
You
and
don't
it's
always
not,
get it right.
Is it lining up for – that's what I can't decide. I don't think that it is. BYU, better hope Utah's healthy when they play BYU, because their schedule now that we know the Big 12 looks favorable and they have the game in hand.
Yeah.
So if that leaves one spot, K-State does not play Texas Tech. They do get to play Arizona State. They do get to play Iowa State. But like, and they play West Virginia. So there's 3 of the teams that they need to be better than they'll play, but they don't play Texas Tech.
Yeah.
And so now you've got, you know, you got to hope Tech loses a game, and then you got to basically win them all. I guess the point of all of this for me is in Tech's schedule, they have to go to Iowa State, and we'll see what Oklahoma State is, but that's their tough one. I don't think K-State can lose again. I don't. I don't know that they're going to have enough good fortune falling their way to have 2 losses and get to Arlington. I think they got to win out in the conference, Wyatt, to get there, I think, at this point.
Well, you said a lot there with Tech, and I that's one thing that you notice, or at least I pay attention to. I loved the Big 12 when you played everybody in football and it was the round robin in basketball, and I'm going to miss that. I've said that all along. And this is part of the reason why. I think that's what made the league so good and so fan-friendly, because you knew you were going to play Tech, right, as an example, or you were going to play that one team that was, you know, and K-State did fumble it up at BYU, so they got to deal with that, right? So it kind of lowers, you know, what you can get away with. And you're probably right. Getting there with 2 doesn't look necessarily like a great opportunity right now, and it's probably correct. We'll see how it plays out, but who? I'm just gonna say this too: the tiebreaker situation last year was a mess. I hope it's better now. I need to start to look at that a little bit too. We got a long way to go, though.
Well, the problem with it is, I think, like, You can handle business against Iowa State, and you can take care of West Virginia and Arizona State. You've already taken care of Colorado. So those are all good things. And you get Cincinnati, who also only has a loss, I suppose we should mention. But you're not going to have tiebreaker against BYU. And if they are going to lose a game the rest of the way, you're either tiebreaking with whatever the rules are, or you'll lose the tiebreaker to that team. That's like, so which law? I mean, I suppose if they, you know, if they lost to Kansas at this point, it would be possible. But otherwise, you're going to be behind a tiebreaker head-to-head to somebody if they right. lose another game. So I don't know. I think they got to win out. And I think, you know, they can. Like, for sure they can. I think they can. But yeah, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, it will be tough. And, you know, when you think about all of the tiebreaker stuff and all of that and how much time is left, for me, you put it into perspective when you started mentioning all the teams that K-State plays. They play West Virginia, Morgantown. I don't know that most people that follow this league have paid that much attention to Cincinnati, and I'm telling you, they are pretty darn good. They finally have a quarterback who can throw the ball, and he's tough. He can run. I think they're going to be a lot harder team to beat than most people perceive. I don't think playing at Houston is going to be a day at the beach either, right? I mean, we'll see. They've been up and down. I will admit that. But when they've been up, they've been pretty good. Playing at Iowa State will be as hard as it gets. You know, I think playing here for teams is as hard as it gets. So I don't know. But I'm not a betting man. I don't know that a team that will play in the championship game in Arlington will have 2. But it doesn't look great as we sat here and talked today. No doubt about that.
If you were a betting man, you really hope you got the Cats at 3 and not 3.5 this past weekend, which was a fun experience to be a part of as betting men as we are. Wyatt, we appreciate it. Enjoy the brief rest that you get before another long trip out the other direction Let's kick off time for that one. I haven't even looked yet. It's a
6:30.
Helps.
Yeah,
that's actually pretty helpful. What do you guys have coming up for us this week?
Well, we'll go on the air 2 hours prior at 4:30. Not totally sure yet on the players. We actually will make those requests today and try to get those guys interviewed later in the week. But one guy, I won't promise this, but one guy I really would love to talk to that we haven't really mentioned that I thought played spectacular football Saturday night was Brendan Mott.
He was everywhere.
That guy is unbelievable right now, the way
he was
playing.
Everywhere.
Yeah, he's just, you couldn't have a better sixth year than he's having from my perspective. And I love his motor. I'd like to be able to visit with him. I don't know that it'll work out exactly time-wise, but we'll have our typical coverage. And by the way, there was a Fox/FS1 for all those television watchers. It will be on Big Fox. I can tell you that. That was decided yesterday.
Another big opportunity, another big spotlight opportunity for Avery, who's thriving in it. We're looking forward to it. Wyatt, we appreciate it. We'll talk again next week.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much. Had a fun doing it.
There goes Wyatt Thompson, voice of the K-State Wildcats. If you missed any of it, we covered a lot of ground there with Wyatt. You can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. Mott, man, I'm glad he brought him up, Tommy. You want to talk about a guy like Shedeur Sanders who keeps plays alive too long's nightmare? It's a guy like Mott whose motor never stops. And some like he was – I'll be honest. I was fighting and I dozed off one time, but it felt like every time I looked up, it was Mott in on a play. That was a fun game. I don't think they can lose again, Tommy. I think they got to stay with one loss.
Yeah, I think they have to stay with one loss too. Although I think the three teams that are above them, that are undefeated in the conference, BYU, they might be talented enough to run the table. Maybe.
Their schedule's not hard. It's not that BYU used to lose twice.
Right. Well, yeah, because they've already beaten Kansas State.
Yeah.
The other two teams, I don't think they'll run the table. I'm not sure that I believe that necessarily. Iowa State, I think, is kind of solidifying itself as, one of the top teams, could potentially play for a Big 12 championship, and they could easily be in the 12-team playoff as well. Things are falling in a weird way where, again, like I mentioned it to Wyatt, you've got 6th, 9th, and 13th preseason Big 12 rankings for the three teams that are currently undefeated in the conference. It's a jumbled mess. I think we both thought that it was going to be a jumbled mess, but I certainly didn't see these three teams being the teams at the very top.
Right, and it throws off what we were trying to evaluate on the schedule. Just as BYU would have to lose twice. I think that makes it. But here's what Tech has left, just real quick. They host Baylor. They're on the road at TCU. They'll be favorites in both of those games. They do have to go to Iowa State. They won't be a favorite there. They host Colorado. We'll see what Oklahoma State does. They have to go there, and then they host West Virginia. They have a favorable schedule for the most part. And they may lose at Iowa State. That's fine. But then where does a tiebreaker come in? Because that would be their first conference loss. So that's where it gets – because you don't get to play them, and that's where it gets tricky. All right. Sports Daily here on KFH. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster. This portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. Tommy, you got out for the – you texted me yesterday. First time in a month you've played golf.
I did.
Crestview's looking great right now as they're getting things ready to roll. How'd you shoot?
Not very well. I mean, when you don't play for a month, you're a little bit rusty. It was kind of windy yesterday, too, so I'll use that as an excuse. But beautiful day. I played yesterday when it was significantly cooler compared to on Saturday when it was really hot. So I did luck out in that regard, but it was good to get out there. As you mentioned, the course is looking really, really good this time of year. I love it. Before everything goes dormant for the winter time, it's my favorite time to play golf in the fall. So things are good. It was fun to get out there, even though I didn't play very well.
In the 40s this morning. So get out there and bundle up. We appreciate Crestview's support of the program. It's funny you say it was good to get out there, even though I didn't play well. I feel a little that feels like what the Cowboys might be saying today. I just saw during the break. I reposted or tweeted it or whatever. The AT&T Stadium sent out a celebratory image of the stadium full and said 93,000 fans. And I don't know. I don't think this was photoshopped. I think it was their tweet. The score is blurred out on the scoreboard.
Yeah,
on that post. Yeah. They blurred the
probably score. Deliberately. I would guess.
Well, yeah, of course it was.
That was rough.
That's a perfect good to get out there, even though we didn't play well moment. God bless. I told you they're not for real. They have no shot this year. Told you that before the year. Not surprised at all. Like, just none of what's happening with the Dallas Cowboys should surprise a soul. They did nothing in the offseason. They got worse in the offseason. They kept everything the same and lost talent. And like, what did anybody expect?
I just can't wrap my head around the fact that they kicked off the season really well. Like, they went to Cleveland. And I know the Browns are the Browns, right? But they went to Cleveland. They put up a bunch of points, though, against Cleveland. And then all of a sudden, it's like nothing. They can't do anything.
They've been okay on the road, which is, again, is really strange. But you got to look at who they're playing. Pittsburgh, that game was terrible. It was so ugly. And the other one is the Giants. Like, who cares? You lost by a boatload to the Saints. You were getting your tail kicked by Baltimore. I know they made it close late. And you get your tail kicked by Detroit. What do you think is going to happen after the bye when they go to San Francisco and Atlanta and Philadelphia and Houston and Washington? That's their next five games. After this bye week.
Hold on to your butts, Dallas fans. It's going to be rough.
Whatever. I've never been so sad to be so right. They suck. 869-1240. Let's come back. We'll go back to the NFL a little bit. We just gave a real brief overview. Talk to Tommy. I want to pick his brain, see if he feels the same way about the Ravens and the Lions. And it's a very much what have you done for me lately league. And it feels like those might be the two best teams in each conference at the moment. We'll talk about that. Is that unfair to the Chiefs or Vikings? We'll give it to you next on Sports Daily. All right, welcome back in, everybody. IHOP Hotline back open for you, where you can celebrate the new IHOP House faves, all your favorites, just $6 Monday through Friday. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here. Max Power in for Jad this week. Glad to be here with you. On a reaction Monday, all across the land, we have reaction Mondays. And I think most headlines today, at least that I've seen, surround how bad the Cowboys looked against the Lions. Of course, that's how, you know, those things work. I want to pay attention more to the Lions on that side of it and how impressive they looked. They're multifaceted. Devastating that they lose, you know, what's been probably the league's top defensive player this year. For what looks like the year, I don't know how that reacts. So if we were going to do, you know, power rankings and all of those things, I think the two teams, there's a handful that you got to pay attention to. The Lions are certainly one of them. And remember, the Vikings and the Chiefs did not play. But you had the Lions, the Texans, the Ravens, and the Packers all have really impressive wins considering who they were playing. I think the Lions are the biggest statement in a wide open NFC. If Hutchinson had not got hurt, Tommy, I would tell you they're my favorite in the NFC right now. But with his injury, I'm not so sure about that. We'll see how they react to that. The Ravens are the team everybody keeps talking about. I'm not there yet with them. I'm not. The Chiefs beat them. I'm not sure that I would take them over the Texans right now. But they're the team everybody wants to talk about at the moment because Lamar Jackson has been very good, and I get that. But I'm not ready to crown the Ravens. They have two losses this year.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Ravens a lot. I'm high on the Ravens. I think that they're the most likely team outside of the Chiefs to represent the conference in the Super Bowl. I mean, I put them above the Texans, and I love the Texans, and I love what they've done this season. But for me, it's less about Lamar Jackson and more about Derrick Henry. I mean, Henry has had just a resurgence in his career coming to Baltimore, and credit to that offense for finding really, really creative and effective ways to utilize Henry in the running game and have him alongside Lamar Jackson to where it's not taking anything away from what Jackson is doing, but it really is able to kind of complement both of them. I think that part of it with the Ravens, for me, the only sort of thing that I would kind of look at, not even really as a concern, but something that is coming along a little slower, I think, than I would have thought, is just the receivers. And they don't have, you know, they've obviously got Zay Flowers and they've got Bateman, they've got a couple other guys, but that hasn't been the premier part of their offense. And Mark Andrews hasn't had a great start to the season. It's been the other tight ends that they've got. Isaiah Likely, you know, is kind of a boom or bust type tight end that they've got. So that's really the one thing that I think will continue to come along, and it's been a little bit slow going to start off the season, but all in all, I really like the Ravens a lot, and defensively, they look a lot better than they have in years past.
Yeah, they're going to have to get better defensively, I would say. And that's the reason I would still say, give me the Chiefs in the postseason. I think this is their most talented group of pass catchers in the Lamar Jackson era. Now, whether they're living up to it or not, I mean, on paper,
I think
it's as good a group as they've ever had with Lamar. I think it's more about the Texans for me. I still have the Texans ahead of them. CJ Stroud, I mean, he's incredible. I don't know what else to say. Like, for a guy who I didn't have low expectations for Stroud coming in out of Ohio State. I had no expectations. I didn't know what to make of him as a quarterback prospect, and he is awesome. And they lost Nico Collins, who has been everything to them, and Stroud just dimes, man. He just throws dimes.
But they've got a deep receiver room, and I mean, it helps when you add Steph Diggs in the offseason. And you know, with the absence of Nico Collins yesterday, Tank Dell stepped up and had a big game also. So they've got some guys there that are, you know, further down the depth chart that have been effective and that are able to come in. And who knows how long Nico Collins is going to be out. I know they put him on IR, so a minimum of 4 weeks. So I don't know if that's just, you know, 4 week and he's back type thing, or if it's something that can linger longer. But in his absence, I mean, I think they feel pretty confident about who they've got to step up in that depth chart. And even running the football, it's kind of been a next man up philosophy for the Texans also. I mean, yesterday it was Damian Pierce, who really hadn't done much this season at all. Cam Akers the week before did quite, like, it just is a different guy each week. But the one constant, or the main constant at least, has been CJ Stroud.
It's good. On the other side in the NFC, the Packers, I think, didn't get enough love yesterday. And I say love on purpose, pun intended. Jordan Love is back and looking really good for them. I think with him healthy and their talented receiver room is getting healthier, Tommy, I would tell you that I probably feel like three of the four best teams in the NFC reside in that division. Like the Vikings, the Lions, and the Packers. 49ers would be the other team, but I think three of them are in that division, and I think the Bears are good. That's turned out to be the best division in football. I also think they're for real. That was a good matchup for Love and their style of football against Arizona, but they look really good. So statements all around as the two unbeaten teams sit there and wait and remain unbeaten. The Vikings probably get Hawkinson back this week, maybe, or close to it. I want to say he's within a couple of weeks either way. Chiefs aren't going to get that much healthier anytime soon, but did any team step up to threaten those two in your mind over the weekend as the top teams in their respective conferences?
Like I told you at the top of the show, I like Tampa Bay a lot. I really like what they've been able to do offensively. And it's so interesting to me that as soon as Baker Mayfield came in, despite the weapons around him with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and Rashad White running the football and all of that, there was so much skepticism because of Baker, because Baker hadn't really been able to make it work in the NFL. This was, I think, sort of viewed as kind of the last frontier for Baker Mayfield, where expectations weren't particularly high, even with the guys around him, and he's responded. I mean, he looks like one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, and he did a year ago too. But he definitely has this season. Remember, the Bucs made the playoffs a season ago, albeit in a really weak NFC South. That division is better this year. The Falcons are better. The Saints look like they're better, although their record doesn't really indicate it. They're kind of on a skid right now, but you know, Derek Carr is injured. I think that's going to be dependent on how long he's out. And then the Panthers are the Panthers. But that division as a whole is better than it was a season ago. And what the Bucs have been able to do is sort of make statement after statement this season. And sure, are the top teams in that conference head and shoulders better than the Bucs? I wouldn't say head and shoulders. They're better, but I wouldn't say that they're head and shoulders. I think that gap has narrowed quite a bit.
Yeah, I do too. I think both conferences honestly are a jumbled mess, and injuries have been, you know, a big part of that. been a big part of that for the Niners, been a big part of that for the Chiefs. Could you imagine if the Chiefs were healthy right now? Could you imagine if they had their, you know, what we came into the year as think as three of their top four offensive weapons being down? So that's no, I would say nobody's threatening the Chiefs right now. The Chiefs are going to play a lot of close games this year. But if you're telling me, like, when you get to the, it's not all that different for different reasons, but not all that different than what we said last year. They can, they're going to be able to run the ball, and they're going to play great defense, and they're going to have Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. So all of those things still exist for me with the Chiefs, and you know, until, but that doesn't mean I think they're going to win every game they play this year. They won't. They'll play a lot of close games, but they're still going to be there in the end. The Vikings are really interesting to me. They go into this bye week. It's been a near perfect start for them. They've overcome some injuries of their own. They don't even have maybe their second best offensive weapon here in TJ Hawkinson. And here's Sam Darnold, who historically has been able to put short stretches like this together. Can he do it for real though now? And I would say he's certainly never been in a better position to. That's a very obvious statement because he's, you know, he's got Justin Jefferson on his team, but he's about to have Jefferson and Addison and Aaron Jones. And he's got a coach that's a quarterback guy in Kevin O'Connell. I think the Vikings are for real, and their defense is pretty good. Flores may be the best in the business at this particular moment as a coordinator on the defensive side of the ball. It's going to be a fun, wild, wacky year. Continue to be so, Tommy, in the NFL. I would say this, with all everything we just talked about, I absolutely think there are more contenders for a Super Bowl than we thought there would be going into the year. And it feels like there are more than I can remember. But all these teams we're listing, could you tell me definitively that they could not make a run to a Super Bowl?
Not definitively, no. I mean, I think that at least through the first, what are we just shy of halfway through the season, a couple games shy of that, the first third of the NFL season, the parity is there. It's jammed up. You know, we really haven't seen that one team really, and I don't even include the Chiefs or the Vikings in this, completely raise their hand and say that, you know, yeah, we are significantly better than every other team in the NFL. You know, of course, the Chiefs and the Vikings, their records are going to say that for sure.
Yeah.
But there are deficiencies on both of those teams. Every team has them, right? There's not a perfect team in the NFL. As far as the Vikings are concerned, going back to what you had mentioned just a moment ago, it's going to be really, really interesting this weekend to watch Detroit travel to Minnesota to take on the Vikings. Like that, I'm so excited about that matchup because keep in mind, obviously the Vikings had this week off, this last week off. The game before that, when they played the Jets, that was Sam Darnold's first bad game. Like he didn't play great. You know, he threw for under 200 yards and he had an interception, no touchdowns thrown. That was the first sort of wrinkle that we had seen in Sam Darnold this season. I think most people thought that there would be a lot more of those, you know, because he's just a placeholder, right? And so it was almost kind of like he came back down to earth. What I'm going to be really, and I know that the Lions lost Aiden Hutchinson. He is out for the year. That's been confirmed this morning. I know they lost Hutchinson. I'm interested to see if Darnold can bounce back from what happened against the Jets last week and, you know, show that that's just a one-time anomaly and that overall this offense led by Darnold is going to have a lot of success, or if Detroit's defense will be able to limit him for a second game in a row. And then in that case, it's kind of becoming a trend and something to keep our eyes on about the Vikings moving forward.
Yeah, I think probably not. But Darnold's got his own trends to buck, and it's been his MO. He's good for a short spurt, and then he gets not good real quick. We'll see. Now is going to be the time for that. But if I just gave you a list real quick of teams that, you know, have a reasonable chance to reach the postseason, just to reach the postseason, right? You tell me if you think they have no chance to actually win the Super Bowl. Buffalo.
I would say yes.
You would say they have no chance?
No, I would say they have a chance, yes.
Yeah, they have a chance to win, so I agree. The other teams in that division are a little tricky. If the Jets survive the landmine of their coach, I think you could still see a path for them. The Dolphins, I think, are hard to even bring up until we see Tua come back on the field, so I'll exclude them for now. Baltimore, of course they have a chance. Yeah. What about Pittsburgh?
I'm going to say no.
I...
I'm going to say no. I think that they could reasonably be a playoff team, maybe one of the final seeds in. I don't see them making a run to the Super Bowl.
I actually could, in a one-game scenario, see them beating anybody. I'd say it's very unlikely, but I wouldn't close the door completely. And I would like to see Russell Wilson fit in the offense to just see what it looks like. Cincinnati, I know they're 2-4, but no. Until otherwise, I'm going to say. But if they can get there, any chance for you?
No.
I would reluctantly disagree with that for now. Houston, of course, we think has a chance. What about Indianapolis?
Yes. I mean, I think yes, but it's going to be dependent on the health of Richardson and Taylor.
They'd be a no for me. I think Flacco makes him better than Richardson at this moment. That's not an indictment on Richardson yet, but Flacco makes him better. Flacco's been incredible, but I would give them a no. They'd be a no for me. The Chiefs, obviously. What about the Chargers?
Yeah, I can see the Chargers.
I could too. I think their style of football could get them there. Washington is really interesting. Washington could make the playoffs, but could you see them making a run to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think I could. I mean, Jaden Daniels, I think, continues to light things up and show that, he definitely is worthy of being the starting quarterback there. So, yeah, and he's got, I mean, these great weapons that have never had a great quarterback for them, like Terry McLaurin. I could see that.
I'm a very hesitant, yes, because I think their defense isn't very good, but I know who their head coach is and expect it to get better over the course of the season. That's a reluctant yes for me. I don't think we're going to agree on this one. Philadelphia, I would say absolutely if they can get there, they would have a chance.
Yeah, if they can get there, they would have a chance. I mean, it just solely is based on the talent that they have on the field.
There's just too much talent.
They're loaded. I don't trust them. I don't trust them, but the talent is there.
Dallas is a hell no for me. Absolutely.
I thought
no
were listing teams that reasonably had a chance to make the playoffs.
No, I'm listing teams. Yeah, there you go. That have a chance. They're 3-3. I mean, so technically speaking, they'll have a chance, but no, they're not doing anything, even if they get there. Minnesota, I'll say Minnesota. You think they got a chance if they can get there?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I do too. Detroit, yes, for me. Here, this division's really interesting. Technically speaking, Chicago has better point differential, so we'll say Chicago first. If Chicago could get to the postseason, do you think they would have a chance in the NFC?
No, not this year.
I would say yes, and I'll use the example of the Texans last year as a reason why I think they could. I think if Caleb Williams continues to grow like he has through the first six games of the season, their defense is going to be good enough, and they have a lot of talent. What about Green Bay?
Yeah, I can see Green Bay making it.
Yeah, I could too. Atlanta, I'm a yes on Atlanta. Yep. I'm a yes on Tampa.
Yep.
Yeah, where everyone's going to be a yes on San Francisco, and the other one right now at 500 better, Seattle.
I'm not in on Seattle. I think that they, I mean, take a look at that division. I think that Seattle had the best opportunity to take advantage of all the injuries that San Francisco has had, and they weren't able to do it. They haven't been able to do it. I thought Seattle could beat the Niners just because, I mean, of course, like look at who the Niners have been missing. You're without Christian McCaffrey and all of that. And I thought that was the prime opportunity for Seattle to take that mantle, and they weren't able to do it.
Their defense kind of sucks too. They do have a defensive minded coach. So maybe for the same reason, I could believe in Washington, I could give them a shot, but I would say no. The only other team at 500 better, I forgot to mention Denver. Of course not. No. No chance. So it's more jumbled, I think, than we thought. There before we came into this season, I would have given you probably four out of the AFC: Buffalo, Cincinnati, Baltimore, and Kansas City and Houston. I guess it would have been five. But in the NFC, I would have said like San Francisco and Philadelphia, and that's it. So it's been top to bottom closer, I think. And it's been a bad injury year. It always is. And we're only in week six, and a lot of things will change before now and then. But was another fun weekend of the NFL. Did you make any money this weekend?
No, but I had a really good fantasy weekend, and that continues. Dude. Yeah.
Bengals completed some bets, which is a sweat. I didn't think they were going to get it. I was like, why do I keep wasting my money on the Bengals? They have screwed me more than any team this year, but they got it done yesterday. All right.
You're a Bengals believer. I mean, they could be 1-9 this year or 2-9, and you'd be like, I'm a Bengals believer. They're going to get it done.
I know, because I love Burrow and Chase and Higgins. their defense is much worse than I thought it would be. I think that's a problem. And I had no idea until last night how bad their offensive line looks. Their offensive line looks terrible, terrible. And that's not going to let them do anything either. I mean, I like Chase Brown. I like Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, T. Higgins. Yoshivas looks pretty good. Like, you like the things that you see, and then it's like, what is going on? Well, last night it was pretty clear what was going on. Joe Burrow was just under absolute fire, and their defense sucks. So we'll see about them. I don't know. They did cover last night, and I need to just ignore their games from now until the end of time from a betting standpoint. We'll just put it that way. We'll come back. Let's talk a little college football. Interesting weekend. Texas, Oregon, both claims at the top spot. I think Kansas State, we need to get more into their schedule. BYU's going to climb into the top 10 today, I assume. Has that poll come out? I'll look for that. It's usually
came
around
out yesterday.
10 o'clock. Oh, that's right. It comes out. The AP comes out that night. So we'll take a look at the new poll. How many of those teams are actual contenders as well? It's all coming for you on Sports Daily as we roll through hour number two.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. Glad to be with you here each and every morning, 9 to 11, and all the different places that you can listen to the program. By the way, you can win some HTO with us right now. More than 25 flavors of iced tea to choose from, sweet or unsweet. You can also get your hands on some iced or hot coffee. By the way, it's buy one, get one 50% off on coffee drinks from 8 to 10. That's through Thursday of this week. All you got to do to win, though, is text the keyword TEA to the short code 20357. That's T to 20357 to get your hands on one coupon for a tea, for a coffee on us here at Sports Daily. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. We come back here, Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, Max Power producing for us. And we look at college football from a wider perspective. I would have kept Texas at the top still, Tommy, I think. Look, all they can do is what they're supposed to do, and they did exactly what they were supposed to do. When we picked those games on Friday, I'll be fully transparent. I had no idea the injuries that Oklahoma was dealing with coming into that game. Not only were they down to a true freshman quarterback, they were down, according to the broadcast, their top five wide receivers. They were starting with their sixth guy on the depth chart. And they had no chance. I didn't realize that, or I would have never taken the points in that game. But Texas did what it was supposed to do in that situation. So I would have left them one. Oregon gets the big win over Will Howard, and he's taking some heat this week, which kind of sucks, at Ohio State. But Oregon is there at two. No problem there. And then it gets a little messy, you know, I think for the rest of it, Tommy. Alabama stays in at seven, which I thought was kind of interesting that they didn't fall. They probably should have. Iowa State moves up a couple of spots. They're now inside the top 10. A lot of people thought BYU might move inside the top 10. They did not. They stay at 13. They only moved up a place. Kansas State moves up a place to 17. And then that's it for the Big 12. No Texas Tech, which also surprises me a little bit, but you know, it's been a pretty interesting year for college football. And I would bet you that if we asked a lot of people going into, what are we in now of the college football season, week six, if you asked a lot of people going into week six who the top three teams are, you would have had exactly zero people say Texas, Oregon, and Penn State.
Texas is great. I mean, I think that Texas is
totally great.
I think they're the best team in the country. And yeah, Oklahoma is depleted. There's no doubt about that. But I think by talking about that, you end up taking credit away from Texas, and they deserve all the credit. Like, their defense is spectacular and just did a phenomenal job. And really, yeah, the offense put up 34 against OU, but I think it was – you know, that wasn't the highlight of what the Longhorns were able to do. They were absolutely smothering defensively in that game. I want to go back to something that you said about the Oregon and Ohio State game. Why does it kind of suck that Will Howard is taking some heat? You said that kind of sucks.
Will Howard.
Like, Will Howard.
Will Howard.
I mean, Will Howard, he absolutely deserves the heat. I mean, in that moment.
No, like, I that's not what I mean. I just mean it sucks that he had a moment like that. I want Will Howard to be insanely successful. That's all I mean. Like, I root for his successes. I don't like Ohio State at all, but I do want Will Howard to be great. Will Howard is, to me, he is the poster child for all the changes in college football happening for all the right reasons and being a good thing. He's a guy who was about to be pushed out. Right. He was not going to be the starter for K-State this year. There was no chance. Yet he gets an opportunity as a guy who, you know, bled, sweat, did everything right for K-State, A, to go have a chance to let football earn him a living for a short period of time. I don't know if he's an NFL guy. At one point, I thought he could be and would be, but I don't know about that anymore. And he gets a chance to go play at that level. I think that's everything right with all the changes that have come in college football. He did everything for K-State the right way. I root for Will Howard. That's what I mean. Like, I was, you know, it's hard for me because I really don't like Ohio State, but I would like for him to have a taste of this. If, you know, if it's not going to be a team that we follow, and there would be fun for me to root for Will Howard a little bit, I guess.
Well, he's getting a taste of, you know, what it's like to not deliver when he needed to deliver the most for his team. And that's, that comes down to clock management, you know, all of that with a quarterback that's been around for a long time, for a long, like, he should know better than that in that moment. You know, so a mental mistake down the stretch for Howard, and something that, you know, I would imagine, and I don't know because I'm not, you know, in Ohio, but I would imagine the backlash towards the Ohio State quarterback, regardless if it's Will Howard or somebody else, is going to probably be louder and more intense than anything like that happening in Manhattan. So that's something that, I guess, if he's going to experience the highs and being able to go play for a program like Ohio State, earn money, all of that, that comes along with it. You know, that expectation to deliver in the crucial moment. And Howard wasn't able to do that. And so I would imagine that that's probably tougher to have happen when you're playing for Ohio State.
I don't, I'm trying to figure out, like, what was in his head.
I don't know.
At that moment, I think I don't know if he had time to look up if he thought he would have one more second on
and
the
it's,
clock.
It's that. I mean, it's the last play where he slid and the time ran out. But it was also a couple of plays prior when he didn't realize, and I don't think really anybody on the Ohio State offense realized, that the clock started when the referee, you know, signaled for it to start. And they let a lot of time be ticked off the clock there. I think it was like at 30 seconds and it went all the way down to just over 10, I think. That was rough. There were some pretty egregious clock management situations there for Ohio State, not just Will Howard. I mean, you know, Ryan Day's got to be, you know, on the hook for that as well a little 100%. Bit. But it was a bad showing at the very end of, and that's a game that was absolutely winnable for Ohio State.
If they make the kick, they still got to make the kick. It's college football. And look, they only have really, that was an impressive performance by them just in general, you know, on the road at Oregon. They beat Iowa pretty handily. They haven't been tested a ton this year. And I'm not, you know, other than Michigan, it's not even really a test this year. They're probably going to get in to the playoffs. So it's not the end of the world. He's had three games this year where he's completed more than 80% of his passes. He's been good. He's been really good for Ohio State thus far, but I do root for his success. So I just hated that it came down to that spot for that guy. If it was, you know, trying to think of it, but if it was somebody else on the team that made a bad, then I would be like, haha, sucks to be you. But I don't want it to be for Will Howard. I really do root for him. I like Will Howard. I want him to be successful, and I'm glad he's got this opportunity. And that comes with the challenges that he just, you know, walked into. That's a tough spot. Now, there's not really, you know, for the Big 12 to you know, Iowa State only to be up there at 9. Otherwise, it's all representative. The only other team that's not SEC or Big 10 is Miami. That's the world we live in. You know, get used to it. We don't know what's going to shake out yet in a ranking. So I don't know. It's too early probably to start looking at CFP stuff, but I don't think it's too early to just notice that sort of thing, right? Everybody in there except one team. You've got the ACC gets to have a team in the top 10, and the Big 12 gets to have a team in the top 10, and then everybody else is dominated by those other two leagues. I guess Clemson is at 10, but they're, you know, both Miami and Clemson aren't going to be there at the end of the year. Is this the reality you think that we will be in, at least in the short term, that it'll kind of be one ACC, one Big 12, and everybody else will be those other two leagues. That I feel like it's a precursor to what's coming in the CFP.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you've got these teams that are all, you know, clearly jockeying for position right now. And I think that really in the top, you mentioned a few minutes ago, the teams that are in the top three that at the beginning of the season, you know, nobody would have necessarily predicted. And yeah, I mean, I think that that's right to an extent, but the three teams that are there,
they would have been three teams in the CFP.
They would have been three teams in the CFP. So while there are, you know, while definitely there are shakeups from top to bottom, I don't know if there are a lot of teams. I guess maybe BYU might be the team that nobody had on the radar at all that all of a sudden are now in that top 12.
And look, I'm not like taking offense to it. What do you think would happen if BYU played Texas right now? You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
So I don't think it's unfair by any means. I just think it is, we're seeing it now, what we probably, most of us, if we were being real with ourselves, assume is how CFP rankings are going to go. Are there going to be times where the Big 12 could get two teams in? It's going to be tough. It will take, I mean, not with more than one loss. I'll say that. I can't imagine two teams getting in from in the ACC is the same thing. If they have two losses, it'll have to be an unbeaten team and a one loss team or two one loss teams. That's the only way it can happen. And then you're going to have teams like Boise, who are going to, you know, to earn their spot in most likely. Can Notre Dame get back in? Like it's probably going to go exactly the way we thought it would go. It just is. And I guess I'm okay with it. Cause I don't think, like, I don't have a problem with any of these rankings. I would have liked to see BYU go into the top 10. Do I really think BYU is a top 10 team in the country? I don't. And I hope I'm wrong about that. I think it's a great story, but it is just reality. And I think it's reflective, and I think it's probably right.
I think it is. And, you know, it's interesting because from day one, especially knowing the layout of the Big 12, I never really had this strong sense that at least this season we were going to see a strong representation from the Big 12 in the CFP. Really, in my mind, it was going to take a team, and I'm not going to sit here and say that I thought that it was going to be BYU by any means, but it was going to take a team to rise above and to beat everybody else. And so, yeah, if that continues to happen, you know, my biggest fear is that it will be BYU and they'll be the representative from the Big 12 and they'll get crushed in their first game. And then there goes the Big 12 and the CFP moves on without the Big 12. I there's a long way to go before that scenario has, you know, a chance to happen. But I'd really like to see, honestly, I don't like Iowa State, but I think Iowa State's probably, from a talent perspective, the best team in the conference right now. I'd like to see them continue and be, you know, in a position to where, because I think they could get into the 12-team playoff, and I think they could win a game or two.
I would ask, and I'm glad you brought that up because I was just going to ask you. See, I think that team is probably Kansas State, honestly, and I have not watched enough start to finish Iowa State. I actually like Iowa State. They've been a great bet all year, all year long. But I that's what I start to wonder about K-State, and it's what I hate about what happened in Provo. To me, I think K-State might be that team, and I think we saw some of that in Colorado there. That's a tough spot. There's going to be teams that go to Colorado and lose that you were like, oh, man, I thought they would be better out there. K-State overcame a lot in that game, a lot of injuries. So did, you know, Colorado had a lot of them too, but it was just a bloodbath there at one point. I think by the end of it, as Avery Johnson continues to develop, I think K-State will be the Big 12's best chance at a playoff win. I really do. And we'll see. And I'm not being fair to Iowa State, but I haven't seen Iowa State enough start to finish like we have a couple of the other teams, because they haven't played K-State or KU yet. And so we'll see them. I mean, they've certainly impressed, and they have that big win at Iowa, but it was a 1-point win. And other than that, I mean, 12-point win at West Virginia is easily their biggest win of the year to me, Tommy. That's their signature win. Beating Baylor at home, meh. They went to Houston, Arkansas State, North Dakota, and then they have that win at Iowa. You know, they're going to get tested. They get to play Texas Tech. They get to play Cincinnati. They get to play Utah. They get to play K-State. Their big games are still coming on their schedule. So we'll learn about Iowa State. I think K-State's the team that has the best chance to win a playoff game.
Here's the only concern I have about Kansas State, and you actually alluded to this in the interview with Wyatt in the first hour. There's a chance. I don't know how likely it is, but there's a chance that you could have a letdown game this weekend if the Wildcats are not careful going to Morgantown. Because, you know, let's just call it for what it is. You go to Boulder and you take on the, you know, big time show that is Colorado football with all the glitz and the glamour and all of that.
And that quarterback.
And that quarterback, that coach, all the talent, all of that. That's not only physically exhausting, that's mentally and emotionally exhausting. Like, the leading up to the game, the preparation for it, the 60 minutes of football, and then you turn around and you go to the other side of the country. And it's back-to-back road games. It could be really easy, and I'm not suggesting that Kansas State is in this boat, but it would be really easy for a lot of teams to get up for Colorado, be focused on that, and then not get up for West Virginia on Saturday. Like, that is a trap that a lot of teams have fallen into. I think that, I will say, I give Chris Klieman a lot of credit and his staff, because I think that they will do everything in their power to avoid that. And you better believe that they're going to get their guys as prepared as possible to try to avoid a letdown game. West Virginia is a good team, and they're a team that they were, I think, probably underestimated going into this season for sure. And here they are, where they're kind of just sitting in wait. Like you mentioned, I think before, like, they're a little pissed off that they lost to Iowa State, you know, and so, like, it's got all the makings of a letdown game for the Wildcats. If they can get through this game at Morgantown this weekend, then at that point, like, I'm ready to have a conversation about them being the Big 12 team, a Big 12's team in the CFP.
Again, their path to get there is really difficult. I just think if they get there, they'd be the team most likely to win a game. You can add up 1,000 reasons why this is just such a nightmare portion of the schedule. It's back-to-back road games. It's back-to-back, you know, the longest trips you'll make all year long. West Virginia is on the second half of back-to-back home games, coming off of a loss they're upset about. Like, and oh, by the way, Kansas looms next week. Like, there's a 1,000 different reasons why distractions could be in play, fatigue could be in play. Oh, and by the way, Avery Johnson did have to leave that game. And oh, by the way, they had, what, their top two corners and a safety leave that game. So it's just all, and you don't have any time to recover normal, like you normally would. So this, I would suspect, and I haven't seen, let's see if we can find the early line on that game. Because it is not one that I am particularly excited to like bet, for instance, because it feels like it's going to be really, really, really difficult to go out there and perform well. To me, it becomes more about going out there and surviving. Can you go out there and just get through it? West Virginia right now is a 3-point dog. K-State's a 3-point favorite. The over-under is 54.5. I'd probably take the under. And I don't know that I'd lay the 3.
I don't think I'm going to lay the 3.
I think I'd go money line at that point. Because I do think K-State can win, and I think they should win. But it just feels like an ugly kind of game brewing, and they have to be able to take care of business there. And look, people are going to see that nationally, especially now that West Virginia just lost a game. And they'll be like, see, K-State's not that good. They barely got through a game in Morgantown. But that, we know that's not the reality of what looms this week. It's a survival game. They just have to survive Morgantown. They do. They got a chance to really open people's eyes last week at Colorado. Now you got to go the other direction and just survive. We'll have much more on that game. It's in the national spotlight. You go, Avery Johnson. Go show everybody why everybody's so excited. Shoulder the load. Put it on your back and let's go. We'll have much more on that game throughout the week. Monday Night Football, Tommy. You know, before the year started, we probably looked at this, and at least I did, and was pretty excited about it, right? The Jets finally get Aaron Rodgers. The Bills are the Bills. They've got Josh Allen. They've got all these things. It's exciting for a very different reason tonight. You've got the, you know, you've got the train wreck happening sort of with the Jets. Their season is far from over, I would say, but they finally make some changes offensively, get Nathaniel Hackett out. If you were the play caller for the Jets, Tommy, where would you start things? Like it to me is just so screamingly obnoxious for the last few years. Like, we all watch football. We all know how this goes. How would you start the game plan if you were the Jets?
You remember the scene from The Blind Side where Sandra Bullock's character is in the stands and she's like yelling at the coach and she's like, run the dang ball. Like, that's, I mean, come on. Like, that's all the Jets need to do is lean on your two studs that you've got at running back. Like, that's where it needs to start and end with the Jets.
So the last two games, okay, so they go two games against the Titans and the Patriots where Breece Hall carries the ball 14 and 16 times. Okay, they win those games. Then they come and they play Denver and Minnesota. The scores, the Denver game was 10-9. The Minnesota game was 23-17. Close games, right? Low-scoring games. Breece Hall touches the ball 10 times and then 9 times. They're not even throwing to him in those games. I mean, it's absurd.
Add on top of that, that Denver game, I don't know if you remember it, it was pouring down rain the entire time. Like, you know, so it's going to be hard to hold on to the ball regardless, but that should even lean more into running the football.
I'm not sure there's a better game breaker in the NFL either than Breece Hall to break one off.
Yeah.
And for an offense that's challenged to score, there are chances in his opportunities because he busts one off better than anybody. And yeah, you also have the guy you drafted, Braylon Allen, who's pretty good.
He's been pretty good this year.
He's been really good. He's got juice. And I don't like that because I want Breece to hog all the carries because he's from Wichita and we love Breece Hall. But Braylon Allen looks pretty good too. We'll see. I think that Woody Johnson did a very smart thing because whatever the reason Nathaniel Hackett is calling the plays needs to be done.
He's done. He's out.
I know he is now. I know he is now, but it took firing Robert Saleh to get it there. Right. So I think that as much as anything would be a hopeful reason for Jets fans. This game, Tommy, is a 1-point spread. That seems absurd. I don't know how much public money. I would bet you there's more public money going to the Bills tonight than any other game this year, at least in the primetime games. And I'm a sucker for it, too. I'm going to pick the Bills to win.
It's taken everything in me to not empty my bank account on Buffalo just because of what has happened with the Jets. And, like, look, like, Jeff Ulbrich is the interim head coach for the Jets. Let's be real. Aaron Rodgers is the interim head coach for the Jets for the remainder of the season. What's surprising to me with all of that is clearly, and we all know about the longtime relationship that Rodgers has with Nathaniel Hackett. I was shocked that they fired Robert Saleh and didn't make Nathaniel Hackett the interim head coach because of the relationship with Aaron Rodgers. Like, that does tell me that Woody Johnson at least still is independent enough and outside of the orbit of Rodgers enough to not kowtow to that. Because let's be honest, like, I guarantee you that's the first thing Rodgers said.
I don't think that Rodgers went to Woody Johnson and said, you need to fire Robert Saleh.
But I'm sure that when they had the conversation about who the interim was going to be, I guarantee Rodgers was like, it's got to be Hackett.
I don't think Woody Johnson had that conversation with him either. But I do think Woody Johnson's a smart enough guy to be a billionaire to see that it wasn't going to work with Saleh and Rodgers. And so he made the decision, right? Like that, and again, I applaud him because unlike Dallas, where it's clearly not going anywhere positive, he was willing to try something to salvage it when you've gone all in on Aaron Rodgers, like the Cowboys have gone all in on Dak Prescott. So we'll see how it works. But yeah, I expect a lot of running back action tonight on both sides of the ball. That's how I'm betting. I'm betting the running backs in the game. All right, we'll come back. We'll tell you what else is on the network and where you can find it next on